You're listening to the Embrace Running Podcast. I'm Mark.
I'm Elena, and this is episode number 68 for April 29th, 2013.
Welcome to the podcast where we talk about all kinds of running topics from marathons to 5Ks, gear, nutrition, coming to you from Northern California. We did kind of a weird week this week.
Kind of a hodgepodge.
Yeah, runs. So we'll get into that, and we'll be talking about some running news and a couple topics to kind of get into. But let's start it off kind of like we usually do with how our weeks went.
Yeah, I'm going to go first.
Sure.
Like usual. Okay. So I had an okay week. I had a pretty good running week, but not a great cross-training week. I think I haven't been that great in the last couple of, the last month and a half with that, but trying to get better. So I did some cross-training, I think, just on 2 days. As far as running goes, I had 5 days of running with just under 37 miles, which included one incline run at the gym. I've talked about doing that before and finally kind of got back into it. So 5 miler there, where I just kind of vary the incline on the treadmill to try to simulate hill training. I know it's not the same thing, but you know, it's better than just running at zero. And then I also did about a 10 mile run on the weekend as part of the street scramble that we did, which we're going to, I think, talk about in a little bit. So I won't get into that too much. And then I did do another local Fleet Feet. I don't think they have an official name, but like a Tuesday run.
Just
a group run, which I did about a month ago. So I did another one. This time I did the 3 miler. Last time I had done 5 miles, but I did 3 miles for a couple of different reasons. It was a warmer day and my calves are still kind of tight from the Diablo Trails Challenge half marathon. So, and also you got free ice cream at the end of this. And I was kind of in a hurry to get back to the free ice cream. So I was like, I'm going to do 3 miles or 5 miles. So I did the 3 and, got back a little bit sooner than a lot of the other people, so I can get my ice cream. So they actually gave us some Cold Stone ice cream, which was awesome on a hot day. A couple of other cool things on that group run was that I actually got to try the Brooks Ravenna. I think that's how you say it.
Yeah.
So they also had, because, you know, there's a Brooks rep there that had that, and also the Pure Grit, which I believe the Pure Grit is a trail shoe.
Yes.
Which I would have loved to have tried, but we were basically running on, like, sidewalk and, you know, streets. Don't really want to try a trail shoe on that type of surface. So instead I did the Brooks Ravenna, which felt fine. I didn't really have any problems with it. Now that I think about it, the couple of different shoes that I've tried on these runs, I haven't really had a problem with any of them. I think last time it was New Balance.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And didn't really have a problem with that either. Also, Features, the sock company, was there as well. And I got to try some Features Elite. I do have Feature socks that I run in, which I really like. I think you have some as well.
Yeah, I think Features are probably one of our favorites.
Yeah. So they had the Features Elite, and they did a, you know, when they were talking about them going to be there, and, oh, you might get to try some socks. I'm like, well, how's that going to work? Because I know when you try the shoes, you know, you borrow them for the run and then you return them. I'm like, that's going to be a little odd to try socks and return them. They actually had a trade up. So whatever socks you were wearing, you can trade them up for the Features Elite. Funny thing is, I actually had an old pair of Features, you know, that I was going to run in, but they were an old pair and they weren't the Elite, so I did trade mine up and got to keep the Elite socks that I actually ran in. So I actually was running with, like, brand new socks and then a pair of shoes that I'd never run in before, so that was pretty cool.
So the tip is, if you're ever going to one of these events and, you know, there's going to be a sock company there, wear your oldest socks.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, I should have brought, like, some of those old cotton socks, you know, that I don't really run in anymore. That would have been ideal, but I didn't think about it, you know, so, and I still got some free socks, you know, and I got to trade in an old pair for a new pair. So that was pretty cool. So I think, yeah, that was pretty much my week. So it was kind of odd in terms of the different types of runs that I did, but it was nice to kind of mix things up, you know, with the Fleet Feet run and then also the street scramble. So how was your week?
So I'm, getting back to consistency, I guess. So I got my 3 runs in this week. No problem. Short run on Tuesday. Thursday, I kind of followed your suit. I went out for a group run. I went out to Roadrunner Sports for their monthly, I guess it's the fourth Thursday, adventure run that they do at the store. And we've talked about several times before, but it's basically a 1 hour run where you kind of run around town to designated businesses and collect raffle tickets. And then you head back to the store and then they raffle off prizes. So the more running you can do, the more raffle tickets, the better chance you have at, you know, winning something, which is always cool. So, you know, I always like the adventure run just because it's a real easy way to get in 4 or 5 miles, which is usually what we kind of end up running when we go do the adventure run. So I went there and met up with a friend, and we did it. And it was actually a really short course this time around. So usually it's like 12 places that you can run to. So the way this particular location is you either, normally you either choose to run north or south, and you can usually only cover, you know, one or the
north
other.
North or south.
And unless you're really, really fast. This time, like, almost all the locations were north, so it was kind of a no-brainer. So there's kind of more people going in the same direction. But I think we got like 10 or 11 of the stops.
Oh, wow. So you hit almost all of them?
Almost all of them, I think. I think we got 10 of 11. And then the only one we didn't get was they always have a secret location that they put on Facebook, which I just didn't pay attention to. And I think I know exactly where it's at because I think it ends up being in the same place a lot of the times.
Really?
Like, you kind of know where it...
So you should just pass by there from now on.
Well, because some of them are businesses, and then some of them are just like either a rep or a volunteer at a specific corner.
Yeah.
So like there's this one park that seems to always be used as a location, whether it's
a rep for a company or whatever.
So I almost don't need a map that I can go and find half of these places. So, and a lot of the businesses are kind of the same all the time. So did that. I think we got like 4.25 miles in or something like that. Actually did win a gift certificate for some pizza.
Yay.
So I
like pizza.
I think for sure I said to my friend, you know, next month we're going to go back and pizza's going to be on me this time. So that kind of works out. Ragnar was there, or at least the volunteer or rep from Ragnar. They actually threw out a bunch of shirts from Ragnar Del Sol, which was earlier in the year.
That's the one in Arizona?
Yes.
Okay.
So I got to actually see what the shirts are going to look like for this coming year for Ragnar because I actually hadn't paid attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd seen the medals after, I think it was Florida, which is the first one of the year. But this time I actually got to see the shirts. And they basically look the same as last year. It's just a different color. It's a little bit better color. It's like a dark blue.
And the print, I think, is a different color too, right? On the back or something? We're going to have to compare.
Yeah, because the shirt's darker, so they had to go with a lighter print. But it's real similar. So they just kind of threw them out in the crowd, and I got one. But it's too small for me, so it's now your shirt. So
yeah.
So
I got... Thanks that Thursday Adventure Run that I didn't go to for my shirt.
Yeah, so you made out with the shirt. So, and then on the weekend was the scramble.
Yeah.
Not scrambled eggs.
Right. And that's still what I picture every time I hear scramble.
Yeah.
So it has nothing to do with breakfast at all.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and talk about that so people know what we're talking about. So we did this thing called the Santa Cruz Street Scramble.
Yeah.
And these street scrambles, this is kind of hard to say all the time, but I have to keep saying it. They have them kind of all over the San Francisco Bay Area and a couple different locations. So, you know, we went to Santa Cruz. They have one in Walnut Creek and San Francisco and Oakland and
Monterey,
and kind of different locations.
Seattle, I think they were even talking about.
Yeah. So it kind of has its basis in kind of orienteering. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a running thing, but there's some navigation aspects to it in some ways.
Yeah.
So we actually did the 3-hour scramble. There's also a 90-minute and a 7-hour.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And then you can either do it by foot or by bike.
Yeah. Well, a 7-hour wouldn't be crazy if you're on bike.
True.
Although, again,
it's just a long day.
7 hours is, that's a long time.
So we did this. You do it as either individuals or you can do it as teams. So we did it together as a team. They give you a map about an hour before the official start. So maps get handed out at 10 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
The event actually kicks off at 11 a.m.
And that's for the 90-minute, the 3-hour, and the 7-hour. They all start at 11.
Right. So you get this map. So it's basically this big map of Santa Cruz that has all these checkpoints that are circled on this map. Now, the map has no street names.
Right.
So this is kind of more where some of the navigation comes into it.
Mm-hmm.
But the location you're going to is always in the center. It's always like exactly in the center of the circle.
Right.
So it's kind of how you know where to find stuff. And you're allowed to bring your own maps if you want. You're allowed to use your GPS on your phone. Basically whatever you want, but that's all that they give you. So, and each checkpoint is worth a different number of points.
Depending on how far away it is from the start and then also just like the difficulty, I think, to get there.
Right. Or maybe figure out what it is.
True.
So you flip on the back of the map and it kind of tells you what you're looking for at each location. So one was, I remember, look for a statue of a man holding a baby.
Right. And what's the last word on the plaque in front of that statue?
And it's
not just finding these places. It's also having to answer questions related to the place, like you just said.
Right. So it's always multiple choice.
Right.
There's always three options.
Which is, thank goodness I saw that when it was multiple choice. I'm like, because especially like on some county ones, like there was one, like how many rocks are on this peninsula or whatever? And I'm like, well, like where do you start? You know, it could be like 10, it could be 12. But thankfully, like they gave you a range on the multiple choice, like 7 to 12. So we knew it was that one.
Yeah. So it's never like crazy difficult to answer the question. It's just one of those where the question is there just to make sure you actually went to the location.
Right.
So there was one that was like, there was a mural on the wall. You had to say like what animal was on the mural or something like that. One was like a sticker on a doorway that you had to find.
Yeah.
Another one was you had to name the brand of a padlock on some gate.
That's right. I forgot about that.
In the
that
middle
one.
Of some stairs right. that you had to go to.
Like in the middle of a flight of stairs.
Yeah. One was like a bench. You had to like say who was the bench.
Who was dedicated to.
Yeah. Who it was dedicated to. And like I said, it's multiple choice. It's not, as long as you find the location you're looking for, it's super easy to answer the question just to there, you know, to make sure. To prove that you've
right.
been there.
And a couple of the locations vary too. It could be as specific as a cycling store, which there was, I think, two or three that we actually had to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And then it could just be like, you know, at the junction, at this street junction, you know, house number, I don't know, 246, you know,
right.
what's the...
Read the sign in
front
of the house.
Yeah, read the sign and what's, what does that say? That sort of thing. So
some of them were super easy. Some you kind of had to look around and figure it out. None were crazy difficult.
Well, even one of the cycling ones, the cycling shops, the bike shops, the shop itself was easy to find, but then it said, what was the bike rack made out of?
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't even find the bike rack at first.
Yeah, because
like,
there was lots
bike
of bike racks
rack.
Out
like,
front,
the...
and I'm like, this is just a regular
rack?
Bike rack.
Right.
And then, you found around the back of the store.
Yeah.
They actually had bike racks made out of tree logs.
Right.
That they just kind of cut a slot out for the bike, but we kind of had to look around for it.
Right. Which is funny, because when I read the options, the three, I didn't think it was going to be that. That was going to be the options. It was like barbed wire or something else, and the logs. I'm like, it's not going to be logs. Like, that's, how are you going to do that? So, anyways.
And the one that was the statue, we kind of had to like run around. Once we found this little park, we figured it was kind of in there, so we kind of had to run around this little park to try to find it. So,
yeah.
I jokingly said this is probably the closest we'll ever get to doing The Amazing Race.
Yes.
The television show, if you've ever seen that. So, kind of has that little bit of feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to kind of, you know, we were doing this for the first time. We didn't have any expectations. We were just kind of running it just to run and have fun and see what it was kind of all about.
Right.
So, we didn't really spend a lot of time planning what we were going to do before it started. We kind of had a general idea of where we were going.
Yeah. Like, I think we're going to go here first and try to go there. Then we'll try to go there. Then we'll try to go there. But we didn't really have, except for the first couple of stops, we didn't really have any specific locations as far
right.
as street names or, yeah.
And in kind of picking the addresses. General direction, you know, we talked about, we were at Santa Cruz Half Marathon a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of picked, you know, we picked the direction that was kind of similar to the half marathon because we were pretty familiar with that area.
Right.
So it made the start of it kind of pretty easy because we kind of knew where we were going.
Yeah, and even just kind of the downtown area too, which we've been to a couple of times, kind of around there.
Yeah, so it was a lot of going back forth from the map. And GPS on the phone and trying to figure out like where we needed to go and stuff. But it kind of was actually a lot of fun.
It was.
We did a little bit of poor planning because the way it works, we had 3 hours. The one thing people that had done it before told us was make sure you're not late because you lose like 10 points for every minute that you're late.
Mm-hmm.
So big incentive to be on time.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, you're 10 minutes late. You basically threw out, you could throw out half an hour's worth of running pretty quickly. So. We were actually, for the 3 hour event, we were the first team back at about 2 hours and 33 minutes.
Yeah.
So
we had some time to spare.
Yeah. So we kind of, had we been a little bit more competitive or knew more of what we were doing, we would have taken at least another 20 minutes safely to get maybe one or two checkpoints that had been a little bit further out.
Mm-hmm.
But still pretty happy.
Yeah.
Overall, the whole event was like, how many people do you think were there? 50 people?
If that. Yeah.
And a lot of these people seem to... a lot of people kind of knew each other from other street scramble events. So they were all kind of pretty familiar. There was a couple of newbies like us doing it. I know a couple of the people, we ended up covering 10 miles in 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
I think some of the people with the top scores covered like 16, 17 miles.
Yeah. I think one of the guys that was solo did like 18 or something.
And I know one of the guys that came in with, must've been 17 or 18 miles. He came in with 2 minutes left on the clock.
Right.
So, either great planning on his part or he got lucky, but I think they said he always scores in the top of the group. So,
he probably just has it like nailed down. Yeah.
Like I said, planning was kind of it was probably a big part of it.
Right. But we kind of didn't know what to expect, I guess, and or how to plan for it. So I think having never done anything like this before, I think we did pretty good.
And we went after one checkpoint that was like up in the hills.
Oh my gosh.
Like the worst climb I've ever run up we ended up walking it.
It was shorter though than I thought. I mean, but it was funny because when we got to that intersection, we're like, okay, it's up there. It's like, we just got to go uphill and you just look and it's just like straight uphill. You're like, okay, so we got to go up there.
Yeah. And I know one of the guys.
And find this random house.
The guy that did 16 miles, I know he avoided all the hills on the course.
Right.
So, but obviously he was more familiar with the area.
Yeah.
Although you can kind of see on the map.
But still, just being familiar with the area definitely helps.
Yeah. But we ended up finishing second in our division.
Right.
Which was the mixed division for the three hours.
3 hours. On foot, not bike.
Yeah. So it's kind of a lot of little divisions.
Individual, yeah.
We finished second. I think there was only three or four mixed teams. So.
But we still got second.
We got second. So we each got a little ribbon, yeah. Which was kind of cool. So we'll add that to the race medal collection.
But and we got some new shirts too.
Yeah. The shirt was included. Shirts. So everybody there was like super nice. They had snacks afterwards, mm-hmm. But very low key and kind of laid back.
Laid back. Yeah. And relaxed and yeah.
Yeah. But it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I'd actually like to do it another one again sometime. I was actually kind of mid race. I was like all ready to do the Walnut Creek one till I got back and I realized Walnut Creek was the last month.
Yeah.
So now I have to wait an entire year to do the Walnut Creek one. But maybe I'll look at doing one of the Oakland ones, or I know for San Francisco they have one that's like a day and night. You can do a 16-hour.
Now that's crazy.
Challenge. So you're kind of just spending 16 hours through the night riding around San Francisco, and they made it seem like it heads to the North Bay, which would be across the Golden Gate Bridge. Mm-hmm. Which, if that's the case, that's kind of crazy. But I guess 16 hours you can cover a lot of ground,
especially if you're on a bike.
I guess
you have to have a lot of checkpoints for people on a bike too. They're going to be out there for 16 hours. You can cover a lot of ground in 16 hours on a bike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wonder how some of those checkpoints become more difficult to find at nighttime. Like one of the stickers we had to find, like how easy is that going to be to find?
I guess that's what a flashlight is for. I hope the cops don't, you know, nobody calls the cops on you. Exactly. If you're running around these like little back alleys, like with flashlights.
Or like at somebody's like front door looking for a sign.
Yeah. It would actually be really interesting. So, I'll put a link to, I know the group is called Get Lost, actually. I don't know the exact website that does it. But I know they do these things kind of like all around the country and in different locations. I know there's a big one out in Seattle, a big group there that does these things. They also do something similar that are based on like trail runs.
Right.
And I know those is you have checkpoints to go to. And maybe the best way to get to these checkpoints is follow the trail. Or maybe the best way is to just cut across the wilderness,
right,
which you're allowed to do.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you kind of just have to figure out what's the best way to go. And mm-hmm. if you decide just to kind of head out in no man's land, you got to find your way to that checkpoint.
Yeah.
So that obviously even becomes more of a navigation thing. That's why I said where kind of the orienteering stuff comes into play. But really fun and kind of a good way to kind of just do something different, yet kind of be active and get outside and get some running in or some mm-hmm. mileage. Or, you know, there was one group that just totally did it as a walk for the 3 hour.
Yeah.
So I'm not even sure how many miles they got in.
Right.
But
they basically had 3 hours to kind of, you know, like walk around and get to these different checkpoints. So like there wasn't a lot of pressure. I didn't feel unless you were some of those top people.
Yeah. And you know, we did 10 miles mainly because, you know, you had the energy to kind of keep running. I took a lot of walk breaks and it's, you know, you're stopping to look for what you're supposed to be writing down and mm-hmm. you're kind of stopping a lot to figure out where you're going.
Right.
So sometimes you're just walking a bunch because you're looking at a map, trying to figure out like, where am I going next? So.
Or then we did have to pass or cross this one main like highway / main street a couple mm-hmm. of times. So it's like, okay, you're stuck at that light for a while.
Yeah.
So
don't want to jaywalk or be dodging through traffic.
Exactly.
So, so a lot of fun. No, totally recommend that for anybody that's interested. So,
yeah. It was an interesting way to get a 10 miler in. It was a fun way though.
Yeah. I'd like to go back and do it again. And in 3 hours, maybe try to get like 13 miles in.
I think you could totally do that.
Yeah. Especially because I figured out the best way I thought to do this in the future is like get an actual map with street names and kind of transfer the checkpoints to the map with names.
Which is maybe what other people were doing. I don't know.
I didn't see a lot of other maps.
Okay.
So I know some people had like really professional, you know, they had like their routes highlighted. I saw some people that had like their checkpoints like listed exactly like where they were going to go,
mm-hmm.
like with blue tape stuck right on the map so they can easily
refer back to it.
In
the order.
Yeah, it was kind of like laid
out.
And
I know we got our maps and we kind of looked and we're like, okay, what do we do now? Well, now we know what we should do next time.
And then this started at 11 a.m. So, like, you know, I know this was Santa Cruz, which is typically pretty cool weather, but it started to warm up.
Yeah.
So, if nothing else, this was kind of good practice of just being out running or walking out on a hotter day in the sun or just being out on your feet for kind of 2.5 hours.
Right.
Because that's, you know, that's longer than
just constantly
you
moving.
And I would be out there for even a half. So,
right.
Kind of good time spent on your feet, I mm-hmm. guess. So
it was fun.
Yeah. So that was,
I would totally do it again.
Yeah. I totally recommend it. So we'll put a link, like I said, to the ones at least here in Northern California, but check your area. You might see a flyer sometimes. I know sometimes they'll advertise them at like local 5Ks or mm-hmm. just Google it maybe in your area and you'll find something close to you. And I think it's worth doing. It's cool, you know, being able to do it together too.
Yeah.
And I think you could do teams of 3 or 4. I'm not sure.
I know you can go as I know you can have at least 3 or 4. I don't know if you can get bigger than that though.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Although it'd actually be kind of fun to do it with like like us two against like two friends that we know or another kind of.
Oh, instead of like a group of four?
Yeah, like go head to head type of thing would be kind of interesting. So maybe in the future we'll drag some people out and go do one locally here.
Drag some people out.
We'll drag them, force them out there. So, all right, let's jump into some running news. What's going on in the world?
Some what news?
Running news.
Oh, okay.
Is that what I said?
I wasn't sure. Okay.
Yeah, me neither.
Thought it was a new thing we were talking about.
So, Tough Mudder made the news this week in a bad way.
Yes.
So, what happened?
Oh, I'm talking about it?
Sure.
So, I think somebody, a guy in his 20s, I think his late 20s, actually died during, or shortly after a Tough Mudder race, I think as a result of something that happened in Tough Mudder. So, you know, Tough Mudder is like, I think, 10-mile-ish or so.
I thought it was closer to 13, but it's something like that.
Some double digits.
Yeah, it's one of these obstacle course. Involves a lot of, Tough Mudder tends to involve a lot of, not only dirt, mud, and obstacles, a lot of water.
Yes,
a lot of cold water. And some electricity at the end. That's what they're known for also.
Yeah, anyways, I won't even go there. So, I think it was on the obstacle that was, I think, Walk the Plank. I think that's what it's called. I've never been to a Tough Mudder, never done it. But it was something where you jump from the plank, you know, into basically water. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like a 15-foot jump. So jumped in there and I guess was submerged for I don't know how many minutes before they pulled him out. And, you know, I think administered, you know, first aid, took him to the hospital, but ended up dying, I think, shortly thereafter. I think as a result of an accidental drowning.
Was officially what they called it, yeah. So if you're doing a Tough Mudder, be careful.
Absolutely.
And that I think that's the first death I've ever heard of at a Tough Mudder.
Yeah, I think that's the first that's ever happened.
But good warning. Take it seriously. It's not just fun and games. There are some dangers into jumping in freezing cold water or doing these obstacles and stuff like
that. Or getting electrocuted or whatever it may be.
Yeah, the idea of being completely wet and then electrocuting yourself doesn't make a lot of sense to me sometimes.
Right.
But like I said, neither one of us has ever done it. I have a close friend who's doing one at the end of the year, so I'll definitely be picking his brain to get all his reactions on how that one goes. What else made the news? There was a corporate run in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
In the wake of Boston, you know, we said there'd be a lot of changes to races and increased security there. And from the article that we read, they said no bags were allowed.
Right. No backpacks, gym bags, or large bags allowed at the corporate run. I think it was a pretty large race. I think more than 25,000 participants. So.
Yeah, so that's kind of maybe taking it a little bit too far. We hope that's just a short-term reaction, and we won't see that kind of at every race because that would become a major inconvenience for runners. You know, we're all kind of used to bringing gear.
Absolutely.
So
I know a lot of people rely on the bag check and all that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for pre and post race.
Right.
Yeah.
Disney had some announcements this week.
Disney always has announcements. We've always talked about Disney.
Yeah, we've talked about Disney way more than I ever thought we would.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot to talk about. So I think the new thing here is that they added to their Disney Princess Half Marathon weekend, which is in Disney World. They added the Enchanted 10K, which I think is just kind of following their trend with adding the 10K for the Disneyland, I think was the first one they added, and now the Disney World Marathon weekend, they added the 10K. So they added a 10K to the Disney Princess Half Marathon, and they also introduced the new Disney Glass Slipper Challenge, which is basically doing that 10K on Saturday and then the half marathon on Sunday for a total of 19.3 miles. And you get a special medal. I'm not sure if you get a special challenge shirt. I don't remember reading that, but I know you do get a special medal for doing that challenge in addition to what you would get for doing the half marathon and the 10K individually. And then they also introduced a new special edition of the Coast to Coast medal, or I guess it's the Coast to Coast challenge, where they already have the Coast to Coast challenge where if you do a race of, I think, half marathon distance or longer.
I guess so.
I think in Disney World and at Disneyland in the same calendar year, you get a Coast to Coast medal. So now they've added or introduced a new medal that is kind of pink in color.
Mm-hmm.
It looks very similar, if not exactly the same, to the traditional Coast to Coast, but it's pink instead of like the blue or whatever color is normally on there. If for people who are going to complete the Tinkerbell half marathon, which is at Disneyland, and the Princess half marathon at Disney World in 2014, which I believe the two are about 5 weeks apart. So the medal looks good.
Yeah.
I mean, I like their regular Coast to Coast medal too, but you know, this just has pink in it. So yeah.
Like you said, it's just basically the pinkified version of it. But
which I mean, I think kind of goes with doing the Princess Half and Tinkerbell, which are traditionally, you know, more women, you know, specific races. So having the pink medal.
It'd be interesting if you could choose which one you wanted. But I just assume most people would go for the pink one just because it's
if you're doing
less of them out
and,
there. And yeah,
I think so. More of a limited edition, I guess you can say.
Yeah, so that's Disney going crazy, adding 10Ks and challenges. Right. Although I love challenges, but every time, you know, combined races sounds like a good idea to me. So
does it make you interested in doing the Tinkerbell Princess challenge?
Or not really.
Okay. Is that because of the women's specific, or just not really? You'd rather do like Dopey or something like that?
Yeah, I think they're definitely events that are geared towards women.
Yeah.
And so I'll just let the ladies have them.
Okay.
So I'll,
I was just curious.
Yeah, if you want to do one, I'll go out there and cheer you on. But yeah, I don't really have any huge interest in doing it. So
yeah.
And I don't necessarily want a pink medal over a blue coast to coast medal. So I'll
okay.
No reason to do it there.
But yeah. I was just wondering.
And we are, you know, we are doing Disneyland at the end of this year. And one of the reasons was to actually get the Coast to Coast medal.
Right.
Seems since like we did, since we did Disney World, if you're going to do Disneyland, you might as well do it the same year.
Exactly. So. I still think that they should have a special medal for people who did Goofy this year and are doing their inaugural Dumbo.
Yeah, you were talking about
that. But I think you were saying, well, if they're going to do that, they should just wait until next year and give it to people who do Dopey and Dumbo.
Right.
Yeah, and I think you I forgot what you called it, but it had a lot of D's in there with like the Dopey Dumbo.
Yeah, I created my own name,
double
but I don't
something.
Remember
yeah,
what it was.
I don't know. It's pretty funny.
I think that would be kind of cool. But then, you know, at some point we got to stop with all these medals and challenges, and
you got to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, it's like one of those, you know, do every Disney race and you'll get this special medal.
Right, right.
Although that kind of reminds me of Rock and Roll series where
that's true.
Starting at two, you basically get almost for every race you add on, you get a special medal for. So they have encores and grand slams, and you go all the way to 10 rock and roll races in the same year, and you get the rock star medal. So I think, what was four? Grand slam.
Yeah. Rock star was five?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is as high as we went last year.
Yeah.
Other news, what do we have here? The one thing I did want to mention, here in the Bay Area, in the San Francisco Bay Area, they're building a new bridge, which is, one part of the Bay Bridge that we have that connects Oakland to San Francisco. Not as famous as our Golden Gate Bridge that we have here, but they're building this new span of the bridge, and it's scheduled to open Labor Day weekend, or actually immediately following Labor Day weekend. Now that might might get delayed because they're having some issue with bolts breaking, which is a whole big issue that I won't get into.
That's great on a bridge.
but they haven't exactly, I think they're actually supposed to be working some of that out in the next week, but as of now, the plan was on Labor Day weekend, they're going to have a lot of special events that gives people the opportunity to go and walk on the bridge or ride their bike on the bridge. Or one of the events that they're supposed to be having, rumored, because none of this is official because they don't even have an opening date like set in stone because, you know, we're building a bridge. But they're supposed to have a half marathon. Was tentatively kind of suggested that it would actually be that Monday of Labor Day weekend. So I know one of the courses that they had mentioned early on would be a run from Oakland City Hall to San Francisco City Hall, which I won't get into the logistics of. I don't understand how they would do that, but regardless of that.
And how do we get back? But that's a whole nother
story.
You'll
have to take BART, which is our rapid transportation trains to get back across the bay. That would actually be pretty easy.
Okay.
But, I don't know how they would work it on the other side of the bridge, but the reason I just mention it because I don't see them ever closing that part of the bridge or the bridge at all again to do a race.
No, never.
So this is, you know, if you're in Northern California or you're going to be visiting here Labor Day weekend, if they do end up doing this half marathon, I think it might end up being kind of a once in a lifetime opportunity to kind of do that race across the bridge, or at least part of it. I think it could end up being an out and back, but I don't know. So we'll keep you updated, but if you're local or you're coming to the Bay Area for Labor Day, that's something you might want to think about doing because I just think it'd be kind of cool just to kind of say you did it.
Right.
Like, oh, you
know, you're never going to be able to say that again.
Yeah. Especially if you're local, you know, like, I ran that race, you know, when they built that thing 25
years. I remember 50 years ago when they.
When they built that thing.
When they opened up that new bridge.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
And the bolts held.
Well, they say the new one, even with busted bolts, might be safer than the old bridge that we're putting out of use because we have earthquakes here in the area. But
right. And that's what happened. Well, anyways, we won't get into that.
And that's actually Disney, the weekend of Disneyland.
Right.
All the events. Yeah. So. Assuming they do that, I think we're going to try to do whatever race event they do, assuming it's on Monday, because Disneyland, the races are Saturday and Sunday, which would mean jamming back from Southern California to Northern California to be able to do that on Monday. So if it works out, it's going to be a really busy weekend.
So we could be doing a 10K on Saturday, a half on Sunday, and a half on Monday. Yeah.
Speaking of, we should get a challenge.
Do we get a special?
I'll buy you your own special medal
Bay
or
Bridge,
shirt for that.
Dumbo, something. That would be really cool, though.
Disney to the bridge, yeah.
I'd be excited about that. So, speaking of local races, you know, we've talked about CIM, California International Marathon, quite a bit, especially the one that we just ran this past December. Anyways, you know, registration's open. We've mentioned that before. We're already registered for it this year. I'm having some issues talking today. But
that's okay.
Yeah, so, but just wanted to let people know that the entry fee is actually going up on June 2nd. So currently, registration fee is $105, which is not bad for a marathon. And it goes up to $130 on June 2nd. So if you're going to do it, have decided you're going to do it, you might as well register before June 2nd, before the price goes up. And I think right now they're ahead of the numbers compared to last year, just like, I guess, any other
race.
Yeah, every other race. So they're probably, you know, they're projecting they're going to sell out sooner than last year. I think last year they sold out sometime in August. So.
And CIM is kind of one of our local favorite races.
Yeah.
I always describe it as, I've always had a hard time actually describing it. It's a very, it's not a scenic course.
No.
There's no bands out on the course. Not
There's
a lot
a couple,
of couple,
not, but not, not, but it's not known for having
yeah, it's,
bands.
CIM is kind of known for just getting out there and running,
and being net downhill. I think
yeah,
is
a lot
really
of people come out for the Boston qualifying,
right?
Or to set a PR. So it's a lot of fun, but it's very it's you know it's an event where a lot of people try to actually set PRs and go fast and stuff. But it's a nice number, usually like 8,000 people.
Good community support, though.
Yes.
There's always a lot of people.
A lot of
well,
people come out
with
for
the exception,
locally.
Weather permitting, there's always a lot of people out there to cheer you on.
And actually, I don't know if we said the race is actually in December.
I don't know that I actually said that.
Yeah, last year it was pouring rain, but hopefully, normally it's just nice, cool, overcast weather, which makes it, you know, kind of helps
it
you
perfect.
Go fast.
Right.
Other races, Ragnar mentioned earlier, this year they unveiled their trail series.
Yeah, we've talked about that a little bit, I think.
So they just did their first event this past weekend out in Utah, which I think was near Zion National Park. And got to see, I was kind of searching around the web trying to find pictures of the race, and I'm still looking. I haven't read any actual reviews of how it went, but we got to see the medal, which is, for the most part, a wooden medal.
Yeah, with the Ragnar symbol on there, we're not really sure what that part's made out of.
I don't know if it's metal or wood, but...
I liked it.
Yeah, when I very first saw it, I was like, oh, wood. I didn't want wood. I said that a long time ago, but it's kind of growing on me. So,
and my take was it wood. Oh, I don't have another one made out of wood. That
would
be perfect. That was my thought. So.
And it's pretty good looking. Solomon is the sponsor, so they're kind of on there pretty big. But it's a pretty good size medal, so it's kind of cool. So we're actually looking forward to Tahoe, which we will be at doing that one and see how that goes. Other races this weekend, Country Music Nashville, which is a rock and roll event.
Yeah, there's
this
a, lot past of, weekend. A lot of stuff this weekend.
Yeah, it was a busy weekend. So just want to mention that. That's kind of a big popular race. We were actually thinking about doing that sometime in the future.
Yeah.
We were having a whole conversation about doing some rock and roll races next year, but we'll see how that goes. The other one, the big one here in California, Big Sur.
Yes.
Was this past weekend. So got to check out some pictures online. Mm-hmm. Very overcast, which is not a surprise
for
Central
coast.
California coast.
We expect that.
But yeah, that was kind of good. It was kind of interesting, the winners.
Yeah.
For the male and female?
Right. They were actually repeat winners.
Yeah.
So
same people
they both,
as last year.
Yeah. Right. I know. Okay, guys, do a different race next year. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So yeah, they run 2012. I mean, they won 2012 and then won again this year. I mean, that's kind of cool, though, to have that. Like,
it's kind of cool that they defended their title there, you know?
Yeah. And I think it was the female, I'm not sure if I'm saying her name right, but Nuta Olaru. I think her time this year was only like, I don't know, like 30 seconds or less.
Than the year
off
before.
Of, yeah. So, it was
so very consistent.
Very consistent. Right.
And that's one of my bucket list races.
Absolutely.
Very scenic. It's kind of at least 20 miles basically on the coast of California.
Very, not flat.
Not flat.
No. But very scenic.
That area of the coast is very rocky and hilly, and it's going to have its ups and downs, but definitely great views off the coast. So registration for next year opens July something.
Like 15th or
yeah, something
like that.
Like
don't
that,
quote us on the exact date, but it's very close to that. So
and it did sell out in one day last year.
Yes.
So we'll be there first minute trying
to register.
Trying to register
for 2014.
Right.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other races this weekend, not local this time, is the Nike Women's DC Half Marathon. It was an inaugural race. So I think there was about 15,000 participants, or at least 15,000 who entered.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard too much about it. Most of the things that I did hear about it, though, were positive things, very well organized. Like all the gear and the shirts and everything. And of course, the Tiffany necklace that you get crossing the finish line. And a lot of people said good things about that. I think the only thing I heard that there was a complaint was just that they needed more porta potties, which, I mean, that can go for a lot of races. So, you know, I don't know how lacking they were in that area, but everything else it was positive that I read. So I think it was their first race, aside from like San Francisco, like being in a different area. So
yeah, 15,000 is pretty good. I mean, that's obviously less than what they do in San Francisco. But that was probably by design for the first year there.
Probably, and, I would think so.
Yeah, the porta potties. I mean, you have an event with 95% women.
Probably.
So maybe they needed to order a couple extra.
Yeah.
Just to be on the safe
or
side.
Or strategically plan the course around more hiding spots. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the course looked like.
But we're taking you through half a mile of forest just in case you need to duck out.
Just in case, right. There's no porta potties on this mile, but there's plenty of trees.
Other big races, Oklahoma Memorial Marathon this past weekend also, right?
Yes.
25,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we mentioned them, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, that they had opened up entries, or I guess for free, to Boston runners who didn't get to finish Boston Marathon. So I know some people took them up on that offer. I don't know like the logistics of it and, you know, how many people did that. But I know they did have some Boston runners actually complete the marathon. And I believe at the beginning, they typically have a moment of silence for, you know, in remembrance of the Oklahoma City bombing victims. Mm-hmm. And I think they added whatever time that was, whatever time they designate for the moment of silence, they actually added 3 additional seconds this year to account for the Boston victims that passed away, the Boston Marathon.
Very cool that they did that. All right, so that's kind of what's going on this past weekend and kind of what's coming up and things to look for. That's a lot of race. This is like a really busy weekend for running. I'm kind of realizing actually. It's a lot of races.
Yeah, I think we're kind of getting into a busy time. I think we're kind of spoiled out here. Then we can kind of race year-round, mm-hmm. whereas maybe some places are just kind of getting out of like winter and, I don't know, race season's really starting to pick up.
True. I kind of forget about that. We're kind of spoiled with the weather.
Yeah.
So last week was kind of super nice weather, and this week we're kind of already heating up
quite
a bit. So
a little more than I'd like, but yeah. Anyways.
All right. So let's switch gears here. We're going to talk a little bit about pre-race fuel.
Right. Which I think I've talked about something similar before. It might have been like during the race, but
okay.
You know, I'm always having, you know, like forever issues, you know, on the race and stuff as far as like, you know, my stomach and that sort of thing. So I actually came across an older article about eating and fueling before, specifically this is for a half marathon and marathon, and just kind of getting, I think it's called a good start, what and how much should you eat and drink for your pre-race breakfast. So, you know, kind of starts off with just talking about kind of the reasoning for having, you know, good pre-race breakfast. Like what's the purpose of it? It basically helps restock the liver glycogen or the stored energy that got depleted overnight. So the liver glycogen helps your blood sugar level steady during exercise, which, okay, makes sense that you'd want to replenish that, you mm-hmm. know, if it got depleted overnight before, you know, your half marathon or marathon race. So, I mean, I never think about like, oh, let me replenish my depleted glycogen stores, but you know, it's essentially what you're doing. So, as far as what exactly to do, it talks about the best pre-race breakfast consisting mainly of carbohydrates since they're digested more rapidly and our body's preferred fuel source. It also talks about having some protein that can help keep hunger away during the later miles. It does recommend that you limit or avoid fat because it takes long to digest, and fiber, which I think most people, that's kind of a given, just because it can cause bloating and GI problems. So things that it recommends, just as some examples, are, you know, foods like bagel and peanut butter, oatmeal with milk and dried fruit, or yogurt and toast, you know, kind of depending on what your body tolerates and, you know, any sort of, you know, allergies or intolerances that you might have, or even a banana and high carb energy bar, waffle with syrup, which sounded very interesting to me, and strawberries, or even a bowl of rice. So it says if you do tend to feel queasy, if you're somebody who just tends to feel queasy, you know, race morning, maybe sticking with liquid carbs can help prevent some GI problems while they're still providing energy and hydration. So you can do like smoothies or juices or sports drinks. But of course, practice this, you know, practice this, you know, pre-race nutrition, you know, even if you're going to do the liquid carbs, if that's all you're going to do, practice that on like your long runs, you know, don't wait until race morning.
Day. And we say that all the time.
Exactly.
So we're just driving that in people's heads.
Exactly. And then it does go into about how much, you know, carbohydrates per pound of body, you know, is ideal. I won't get into those numbers specifically because we're all
different.
We're all different, you know, but it does also say, you know, if you're prone to mid-run GI trouble, try cutting back on fiber, caffeine, and artificial sweeteners, all of which can exacerbate symptoms. So maybe I need to look at that, you know, before my next half or full marathon. Although the last one I did pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I really changed anything from my pre-race morning. I think it was the day before. And then it also talks about, you know, the timing as far as when you should eat. You know, do you have a specific time for when, you know, like if your race is going to start at 8 a.m., for example, or half marathon or marathon? Before that do you like to?
No, it's interesting you actually mentioned the time because, you know, I kind of have my long run or my race routine morning kind of set. And for me, the safest thing is always less. Less is more for me. So a lot of times I'll wake up and just have nothing until maybe 20 minutes before the race. I'll have a Honey Singer waffle, and that's, or before my long run, and that's kind of been my routine. If I'm getting up really early and it's going to be a while until race, I have these, like, I think I've talked about them before. They're like little bites. I forgot what company makes them.
Yeah.
It's like a little four muffins. Pack. Yeah. It's like a little muffins with chocolate chip.
Right.
Which I really like and are really good. So, if it's going to be a long time until the long run or race in the morning, I'll usually have a package of those kind of like first thing in the morning, and then the Honey Singer waffle half an hour beforehand. But, the interesting thing was this past weekend we did this street scramble, which started at 11 a.m.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
It was like a real weird morning because it's, you know, usually you're running a race or you're going for a long run. I'm usually, you know, races a lot of times starting at 7, 8, maybe if it's a local 5K, it's 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
But for an 11 a.m. start seemed really weird. So I was like really not knowing like 11 a.m. almost to like lunchtime, you know, that's like, and then to be out there from 11 to 2 for 3 hours was tough. So I actually had those same little muffins that I have in the morning. And then I actually forgot to take my Honey Singer before. I guess I was looking at the map too much before we got out there and ran. So I was a little bit screwed up. So anytime the race is like at a real oddball time, I get all kind of screwed up and don't know what I'm doing or eat. I forget, you know, because you're not really like hungry.
Right.
But then like, it's like one of those like 20 minutes later, you're like, oh, I'm starving because my schedule's so thrown off. Right. So.
And then you realize you didn't have what you should have had.
Yeah, because I was going to have like two packages of those muffins and then...
And then you're going to string a waffle, I think.
Right? Yeah, and then I ended up just forgetting and getting caught up. And whenever it's an oddball race, I get thrown off, which kind of worries me for... We're going to do Rock and Roll Las Vegas, which is like 4 p.m., 5 p.m. Like, I have no idea what to do for that. So.
I think I'm just not going to eat, just so I don't have any problems.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think not eating is the best way to go, but it's definitely the safest thing. And it kind of works for me. I do better on kind of less, so...
Yeah, but I don't know if not eating for an evening start time.
No,
I wouldn't recommend that.
I wouldn't either.
Okay.
You can always hit a buffet mid-run, probably.
Just dodge in, come back out. That would be funny. Okay. So, but in terms of when to eat, it actually says you should have your pre-race meal, you know, race morning meal, I should say, early, about 3 to 4 hours pre-race, to be exact, which I don't know that I've ever had a meal 3 to 4 hours before the race. Like for a half marathon or marathon, like purposely, like, okay, it's going to start at 7 a.m. I'm going to get up at 3 or 4 and eat at that time.
If everything goes right at 3 or 4 hours before the race, I'm in bed sleeping.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the reason it makes sense that way, it gives, enough time to digest. So your stomach will be fairly empty and your muscles and liver are totally fueled. So, I mean, that makes sense, but it's kind of one of those things like, okay, I can sleep for like another 2 hours or get up and eat. I've heard of people actually setting their alarm, waking up, eating, and then going back to bed.
Which to me is crazy. But
yeah, that's...
I mean, it's only crazy because weird. I would either have a hard time going back to sleep, or I would go back to sleep and not wake up for the race.
That wouldn't be good.
Yeah. But that's why sometimes I try to eat, like, very first thing, like, soon as you wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just start eating, because that gives you the maximum amount of time to kind of digest and make sure you're good and have plenty of time before the race, so...
Right. And I think that's one of the things that I've kind of learned is I probably need to eat a little bit...
Less?
Not less, but I need to eat like earlier in the day in comparison to when my race start is. Like, for example, if I'm going to start racing at 8 a.m., I probably need to eat like 6 or something. Mm-hmm. When I first get up, but I think traditionally what I used to do is eat like an hour before, which I know is not enough time to let stuff digest.
Well, especially like your normal thing is it like a bagel and peanut butter?
I usually do a Honey Singer waffle with peanut butter.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it does give you the option of, if doing one big meal is kind of a lot, then you can split it up into two smaller meals. Or then if you just want to do just one smaller meal, you can do that and just do it like 2 hours before the start. So that maybe that would be kind of me. That'd be more realistic, mm-hmm. but not eating as much as, what they recommend if you're going to eat 3 to 4 hours before. So you're not, I guess you're not going to be able to make up everything that was depleted overnight, but you're still better off than not having anything.
Anything, yeah.
Or eating real close to race time and then having stomach issues. And then it does talk about, basically, you could do, again, just the liquid, carbohydrates too.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just not going to do well with solids, you can do sports drinks, you can do the smoothies. And then it also talks about recovery. So, that was kind of all like pre-race.
Okay.
The breakfast or I guess it doesn't have to be breakfast, depending on when your race starts, but the pre-race meal, essentially, for the half marathon, marathon. And then just a couple of tips for recovering. So one basically is focusing on carbs, you know, like a bagel or a banana. Definitely having, you know, some protein, something like a high, you know, high protein energy bar along with fruit or even peanut butter and jelly, which I could definitely do peanut butter and jelly as recovery. I like that. I can pretty much do that anytime. and then also, you know, making sure you're hydrating. So this one, I think this one has your name all over it. You know, aim for 20 ounces of fluid, including 200 milligrams of sodium or more will boost fluid absorption. And then skip the booze, at least immediately post-race. You know, make sure that you've kind of hydrated with other fluids before you have a beer, which I know a lot of people will not agree with that portion. You know, they might just have the beer right after.
Yeah. A lot of people head to the post-race beer straight away.
Which, again, this is kind of just general guidelines. You know, you kind of have to play around with it and see what works for you, too. Mm-hmm. And then making sure that you're eating well and hydrating over the next 48 hours after, like, a half marathon and marathon.
Yeah, the post-race hydration is the one thing, or post-long run, is the one thing I've been working on, I think I've said, for the last couple of weeks. And I've been doing better at that. I haven't paid too much attention to what I've actually eaten afterwards. So I don't think that's ever been a problem, but maybe I'll have to pay a little bit more attention. I'm just really making sure I drink some fluids kind of post-long run, post-race, and kind of continue that all day long because I've been traditionally bad. But I'm getting better. Improving. Yeah. So.
And I think part of I think you said your strategy or plan was to have me remind you
yes.
to hydrate.
That's my plan.
Yeah. So I've been doing okay with that.
So if anybody else wants help, you just give him.
Right. Just let me know.
And you'll call him up.
Yeah.
And
just let me know and you want me to call you how often, you know, so that you can hydrate. So I tend to do pretty well with, I think, post-long run and post-race hydration.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to do better with the recovery food portion.
Right.
I think I just need to do better with that as far as getting something in my stomach soon.
Right.
And then just not totally like eating crap like the rest of the day.
And it's always easier.
Real easy for me to be like, oh, well, I ran, you know, when you're like doing like, you know, marathon training, like, oh, I ran 18 miles. I can have like pizza and this and that and this, or whatever it is, you know, and it's like, okay, well, you shouldn't have all of that. You
really?
Know? Yeah. Okay.
I've been doing it wrong. Now, I was going to say, you know, post race, it's a lot easier because, you know, they have the tables laid out with kind of all the food and drinks that you grab. But long run is when it's tough because it's. All you have immediately after is
what you brought with you.
If you drove to your long run, it's what you brought with you. Although I guess if you're doing it out your front door, you have whatever's at home. So you should have, hopefully you have plenty
of food
at home.
Hopefully you have something. Otherwise, that's just poor planning.
Otherwise, you should have ran to the grocery store.
Right.
And brought
on your way back.
Home.
Exactly. Go to the grocery store first and then go ahead and just recover there.
Yeah.
And then come home.
So like we said, a lot of the stuff, you know, we can kind of give you advice or ideas, but you really have to kind of, it's just trial and error.
Right.
To figure out for, like, you what works.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is kind of like the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of have to tweak it and, you know, to your personal needs, you know, your dietary, you know, restrictions or whatever you may have, your liking, you know, and then also just trying it on, you know, before your runs and see how it works. Like, oh, okay, yeah, my stomach did not feel well with whatever, you know, that bagel, but, you know, it feels totally fine with peanut butter and, you know, that sort of thing. So you just kind of have to try it out and see what works for you and do it before the race. Don't wait until the race day.
Awesome.
If you can avoid it. So, yeah.
All right. That's some nutrition stuff.
Yeah.
Let's get into some pacing stuff, maybe. Some race time stuff. So, one thing I realized we never kind of talked about before is the McMillan pace calculator.
Yeah.
Which has been around for years now. I remember looking it up years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, I know we have a lot of people who listen that are kind of new to running. So, they might actually find it useful. If you've been around the block a while, you probably know about it, but maybe you don't. But what is the McMillan Running Calculator? So if you go over to McMillanRunning.com, it's kind of cool because the one thing you can kind of do is predict what your time is going to be in a different race distance. So what you can go in there is plug in your 5K time, and it's going to try to predict what your marathon or half marathon time would be.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually will give you the times for 800 meters, a mile, 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, all kinds of distances.
Yeah, they have a lot of different options that you could select. 2 mile, yeah.
So, you know, I actually have in front of me, I kind of plugged in 2 hours for a half marathon, and that would actually predict my full marathon time as 4:12.
Okay.
Which I think that's asking a little bit more than what I can do. Now, the one thing about the calculator is you still have to train for events. So if you've never run a half marathon or a marathon, and you just did, say, a 25-minute 5K, doesn't mean you can go out the week later and run a marathon at 4:12.
Good point.
So it's kind of assuming that you're putting in the training for each distance.
Yeah.
Kind of almost a similar effort level, I would say, as you did for your original distance.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, if you take, you know, a 2-hour half marathon, it assumes kind of the effort that you put into that. If you put the same type of effort into actually following a marathon training plan, you'll achieve a 4-hour and 12-minute marathon.
Right.
So it's kind of cool. It's kind of fun if you're new to running to kind of put in a 5K time or a 10K time and kind of see what your half or what your marathon time will be. Remember, the closer the distances are to each other, the more accurate it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to do a much better job at predicting your 10K based on your 5K time than it will predicting your marathon based on a 5K time.
Right.
So
so then if you have a half marathon time, you're better, and you're trying to predict your marathon time, you're better off plugging in your half marathon time versus a 5K time to better predict your full marathon.
Right. It's also good. You can kind of do it in a little bit reverse. You can kind of put in what you're shooting for. And then, so let's say you're shooting for that 4-hour and 10-minute marathon time.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of tells you what your half marathon should be.
Right.
So let's say you're shooting for a 4:10 marathon. It's going to tell you that your half marathon time should be 1:58. So if you've only run like a 2:03, you know, you kind of need to do a little bit better at that half marathon.
Right.
In order to reach that goal of the full marathon. So it's kind of something that can be useful. Like I said, for me, it hasn't really held super true at the marathon distance, but kind of the 5K, 10K half marathon stuff has always been pretty consistent for me. Now, maybe that's because I'm not putting the right amount of effort into the full marathon.
Oh, plus granted, you've done 2 marathons.
Right.
And
one of them was pouring rain.
Right. And the other one was you weren't necessarily going for that specific time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was Disney World, you know, just more of an enjoyable.
Yeah, I'll throw that one.
Yeah.
The window,
so it's really just comparing CIM. So it'll be interesting to see with your next marathon.
And this assumes, of course, you know, similar racing conditions.
Of course.
So, you know, if you're doing a flat half marathon, that's, you know, it's going to predict you for a flat full marathon. Not, you know, don't compare a flat 5K to the hilliest full marathon that you'll ever come across, because it's not going to hold true for that at all. So a lot of people like it because it's kind of one of the most accurate things out there to kind of help you. But I mean, it could still be way off for people, but at least it gives you some idea in predicting times. So the other half of the calculation that it's really kind of good for is it'll give you training paces.
Right.
So if you put in your goal time of, you know, let's say 2-hour half marathon, or maybe you have run a 2-hour flat half marathon, it will give you paces that you should be training at. So it's going to tell you actually what your recovery runs, your long runs, your easy runs, what pace you should be running. So it'll give you like a range. I think for a 2-hour half marathon, let me see, for an easy run, it's going to say you should be between a 9:31 and a 10:27 pace. So if you're new to running and you have no idea how fast you should be going, this kind of gives you some idea of kind of where you should be. It also goes into kind of, if you're going to be doing speed work, what those paces should be.
And that's what I was just thinking, because even though I'm not necessarily new to running, but I don't do any speed work, if I'm looking to do some speed work, maybe to get a BQ, this actually gives me an idea of where I should be training in that sense. Because otherwise I'm like, okay, faster than what I, you know, normally run, but like how much faster or in what range? So it actually gives me that range too.
Yeah. Because I mean, you really don't want to be running the same pace on all your runs. So if you're doing easy runs, long runs, they shouldn't necessarily be at the same pace.
Right.
So if nothing else, this might kind of force you into looking at things and separating the paces of those runs a little bit. Mm-hmm. But if nothing else, if you're new, or maybe you need to kind of go remind yourself of what you should be doing in your training runs, if you've set a goal, this kind of gives you that pace you should be training at. And it gives you a nice little range. So it's not, you know, some people might be at the faster end, some people might be at the slower end.
But it still gives you a pretty good range.
Yeah.
Like I think I punched in, I think a goal half marathon time of like 1:39:50, because I haven't gone below like 1:40, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it, for like my easy runs, it does give me a good range of like 8:09 to 9:10. So it doesn't, you know, limit me to like just within a couple seconds.
Yeah, we're not telling you to like set your GPS exactly.
Exactly. So 8:09 to 9:10, that's a pretty good size range, I think, for that.
So this actually helped me a lot in when I was training. When did we run NorCal half?
February.
Mm-hmm. So the entire month before that, actually went to McMillan, kind of punched in my information to kind of get my training paces, and actually kind of went off of that to figure out what I should be doing kind of midweek.
Because
said for a long time that I do my midweek runs too slowly.
Yeah.
And this kind of reinforced that, and it kind of gave me something to go by. So I spent that month leading up to NorCal kind of going by the McMillan paces that it gave me, and I ended up PRing and knocking like 6 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it was,
yeah,
off my time.
It was a pretty good amount of time.
Yeah.
Like 6 minutes plus, I think.
It really helped me in getting that PR, so maybe it will help somebody else kind of maybe in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think over the next 7 weeks, we don't have a lot of races coming up, so I'm going to really be kind of viewing this as my training camp and kind of following this and banging out some of the appropriate times that I should be and breaking my habit of kind of going too slow during the week in comparison to the races that I do.
Yeah. And I think having this like in writing essentially, so you kind of know, okay, I should be running around this pace if I want to have this half marathon
mm-hmm.
time. Right. I think that kind of is a good motivator during the week. You know, if you're like, oh, I'm just going to go around, you know, and then you're like, okay, well, I really want to, you know, get a new PR or whatever it is, you know, so I need to be running a little bit faster or slower in some cases.
True. Who knows? I mean, a lot of people go out and run too fast on their right. easy runs. That's very, or their long runs.
Yeah.
So this might be something that's going to tell you need to kind of dial it back a little bit.
Right.
Because you should have hard workouts and easy workouts. It shouldn't mm-hmm. be every single workout to the max, and it shouldn't be frolicking through the park on every run either. So it's kind of finding that sweet spot for that kind of thing. So,
right.
I recommend if you haven't never checked it out, go and check it out. It's kind of fun just to kind of punch in numbers and see what comes up. Kind of gives you an idea, you know, maybe if you've only done a 5K, 10K to what you could do in a full marathon,
mm-hmm.
just to kind of have some idea. Otherwise, you're just really making a guess and pulling numbers out of the air.
Right.
So, check it out. Kind of interesting. There's also an iPhone app. I think it's called McRun. I think it's like $2.99 though. I've never checked it out just because.
That's from McMillan?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
So I just never kind of saw the point in throwing $3 for it when it's kind of on the website.
Got it.
And I think it actually looks a little bit better and gives you more information on the website than it does on the app, but don't hold me to that. But it actually does have some videos on the website to kind of explain all of this and actually kind of goes through some of explaining like what you should be doing on an easy run versus, you know, a tempo run type of stuff. So it's actually really good with the videos on there and stuff. So check it out. Put a link in the show notes. What else? What are we getting to now? Feedback.
Yes.
So let's see. Who do we hear from this week? Ken shot us an email about Spirit of the Marathon,
which is really funny
because I think we were just
talking about that too.
Yeah, like, I think like we must have seen the same press before. Release.
Yeah,
or something.
It was pretty funny.
So it's actually Spirit of the Marathon 2
right.
that's coming out. There was a Spirit of the Marathon 1, which was what these are movies. It's a documentary. First one was about, I think they focused on like five people that were going to run the Chicago Marathon.
Yeah, I think Dina Castor was one of them, right?
What
was that movie, I think?
I don't
know. It was in 2008.
We did both see it. We actually...
We have the DVD,
We have the DVD.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it in a while. But it was kind of cool because it focused on different levels. So there was, you know, a focus on an elite athlete, kind of focused on somebody brand new doing their first marathon,
mm-hmm.
kind of somebody else who's kind of, you know, middle of the road. So it kind of focused, you know, on several different people.
I think there was like an international elite athlete too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Can't remember
several
his name,
people.
But yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a... I thought it was a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
Well, if we own the DVD.
I was going to say, I bought it. So
pretty good.
I really enjoyed it.
So the sequel to that, Spirit of the Marathon 2, is actually focusing on the Rome Marathon,
mm-hmm.
which I know nothing about. But I assume the movie is going to be kind of similar, but it comes out June 12th. It's going to be one of these one-night premiere things.
Yeah, one of those Fathom events.
Yeah, it's a Fathom event, which means it's going to be June 12th all over the country in movie theaters for that one night, one time. Usually it's like 7 p.m. everywhere. I think they send that to all the theaters, like either over the internet or by satellite, and they kind of record it on their DVR and they play it one time and then that's it. But yeah, so June 12th, check your local theater, or actually I think you can go to marathonmovie.com and kind of punch in your zip code, find your local theater. It's usually not that crowded.
No, I mean, I think we saw, what did we see? Hood to Coast like that, I think.
Yeah.
It was a Fathom event.
Yeah, it was like 12 of us in the theater, but
yeah.
It was actually a lot of fun. We actually saw, there was a Leadville, the bike race.
Yeah, yeah, that was
documentary.
That was
we saw that
too.
As a Fathom event too, but yeah, it'll premiere on June 12th, and then pretty soon after that, the DVD will actually probably go up for sale.
Right.
But I think it's always fun to kind of see it day one and see it in theater on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're
with 10 of your closest,
hopefully a few more. But actually, right. when I was looking up this one, I know in our area it was actually playing at a lot more theaters than I thought it would.
Yeah.
So well, that actually might mean less people at each theater. So
you don't
have to go so far. But pretty cool, worth checking out. And I'm 99% sure we're going to go check it out on June 12th. So mm-hmm. we'll give you a review pretty quick after that.
Yeah, I think if you want to see Spirit of the Marathon, the original one, then you can see it on Hulu.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that's what Ken had said.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So if you want to see that before, not that you have to.
Right.
You know, but you can.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be.
Yeah, I don't think
you
need to
see it at all
yeah.
beforehand. But
if you ever want to see it.
Yeah. Something cool. So check it out. We also heard from Heather from Wisconsin, who was
yes.
letting us know about some. We were talking about challenges.
Right.
More challenges and multi-races to do.
And this one, I think, is particularly because it's on Memorial Day, I believe, yeah, or part of the challenges. So it's the Madison Marathon events, which has it has a 10K, I believe, on a twilight 10K on the Saturday. It has a half marathon, I believe, on the Sunday. And you can do either of those. You could do both of those, and it's a challenge. Or then you can do both of those and then come back, I believe, in November for the full marathon, and that's a whole separate challenge. So that's definitely interesting. I know that it's sold out. The challenge is sold out for this year. So if we wanted to do that challenge, we'd have to look at it for next year.
Next year.
But if it's on Memorial Weekend, that may be
a good opportunity.
A good opportunity. Exactly. Yeah,
like I said, it doesn't seem to be a lot of events on Memorial Day weekend, like all across the country.
Right.
It's kind of always like smaller stuff that weekend. But I really like the idea of kind of doing a race in the evening and then coming back the next morning.
I like that twilight one.
Yeah. To basically do another one or come back and do the same distance. Although it kind of reminds me of a Ragnar. In some ways.
Yeah. That's where recovery is really important too.
Yes.
You don't have a lot of, even though it's a 10K still, you know, that's going to take a lot out of you, and then to turn around and come back less than 12 hours later, probably, and do a half marathon.
Yeah. That actually seems really interesting though. I'd love to see more of those. It's kind of nice, especially if it's like a location, well, really in between races, you should just eat and go to bed. So.
Why were we going to say?
No, you know, it'd be cool if there was a place that you can, like, that would be fun to kind of hang out.
You can do a whole separate challenge and just stay up in between.
Wow,
and go to bed after the half marathon.
And that's definitely a Ragnar.
That's true. Okay, yeah, that's true. Yeah, but I think Heather's going to do the half marathon this year, and she's actually planning to do 13 halves this year.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot
so
of people
13
end up
in 2013. So that's pretty cool.
That's actually smart. A lot of people try to do the 12. That seems to be a very popular thing. Is 12 half
like
marathons, or a lot of people do 12 marathons if you're really
right.
If you're really crazy,
exactly,
or a maniac.
Right.
I guess you'd go for 12, but 13 is kind of a good idea. So I guess that means next year you got to do 14.
Right.
And kind of
keep going.
That'd be kind of cool, actually. So we also heard from Rob from Oregon.
Yes.
Who did the Eugene. I think he did the half marathon, right?
I believe
they have a marathon and a
half marathon.
And actually sent us pictures. So thanks for the pictures.
Yeah, we'd love to see pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was cool seeing the medal, which is actually really nice. I noticed the ribbon was
Really liked the ribbon.
Super cool looking.
Right. Green. Yeah, it was nice.
And the shirt was really nice. Nike.
Yep.
Because Nike's.
Black shirt, by the way.
Yes. A lot of black shirts. We're kind of shifting
ever
away
since
from
you
that.
Said that.
We're shifting away from that. So it seems like with the races that we're doing. But Eugene is actually kind of cool because you do finish on the track at Hayward Field.
Right.
So if you're familiar with the history of running, a lot of Nike ties back to that. Steve Prefontaine, Hayward Field, very cool place. I'd actually, the Eugene Marathon is actually on my bucket list of races to do someday.
I guess by default it's online. No, I mean, I would love to do it. I would love to do it.
I don't think you'd let me go by myself and just do it. I think you'd.
I want to do too. Yeah.
So the only thing we realized was because it was this past weekend, it's the same weekend as
Big Sur.
So if that holds true for next year as well, that means I think for Eugene, we'll have to wait until 2015.
That's crazy. Thinking that far ahead with.
Yeah. Yeah. Racing kind of makes you look, if you do a lot of races and you're kind of particular about what you're doing, you kind of sometimes got to really look way out on the calendar and plan stuff. Because I already have stuff in my head for 2015. So. Nothing for 2016 yet. My 2016 is wide open. We can still add anything you want for that one.
Okay, so good pencil stuff in.
But thanks for the picture. It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I actually really like their logo. I'd seen it on the website before. And kind of had like the shoe and Eugene. And
And cool. Thanks for the race picture too. I like that. And I actually happen to have a hat just like that. I have that exact hat. It's pretty funny.
So I think that's going to do it for this week.
Yes.
We're actually racing next weekend. We're doing the Pleasanton Half Marathon. I almost forgot about that. So looking forward to that. I think we'll have lots of people out there that we know.
Mm-hmm.
So local. It's kind of a local race. Probably going to be 1,000 people. I'm not even sure. It's that big.
Maybe
a little bit less. But should be a cool race. Last year they had black shirts. This year they're not black.
Right.
It's going on.
They're
the
either gray
theme.
Or yellow. We're not sure which.
Because there's a 5K.
But either way, don't have too many of either one.
Yeah, and we're actually getting an additional medal because we did NorCal.
Well, that's right.
Half. So, speaking of challenges, we get
some series medal or something.
Yeah, so we should get to. Cool. So looking forward to that. That's the race I'd kind of circled on my calendar at the beginning of the year to PR, and then I PR'd early. So now I'm kind of like, whatever happens.
Never know.
So I guess now the hardest part is choosing what shoes to wear because I know part of the course is gravel.
Are you thinking of wearing your trail?
No, but I might. Oh. I don't know if I'm going to go with like my newest shoes, my oldest shoes. I have no idea what to wear.
You know, I
because it's like a mile, 2 miles of gravel at the end.
Right.
And it's kind of thick gravel.
Yeah. I had forgotten about that. So
and really dusty through there.
Right. I'm going to have to wear some maybe older.
But it was
not old, but older shoes.
Yeah. Super well organized last year. So looking forward
to
doing it this year. It might be a little bit warm.
I
think
the way the weather's going, I think it's going to be a little warm. The interesting thing, I don't even know if it's the same course. I haven't looked yet, but if it is, that whole like last mile is like at that park.
Yeah.
So you like you can almost like see the finish line. You can hear the people. Like your car's probably not that far away, but you have like a whole mile to go. So it's kind of that's pretty rare.
Yeah.
I think for half marathon.
Yeah, it's always a bummer when you can like see it's the so finish close. Line, but you still have to run like off in the opposite direction for like an additional
like
2 miles.
Away from it.
Yeah. Like, oh, I could just cut across right there and be done. So yeah. So I think that's gonna do it for the week. Let's get out of here.
All right. So the website for the podcast is embracerunning.com. Facebook page is facebook.com/embracerunning. You can send us any comments, questions, or feedback at feedback@embracerunning.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail at 925-400-7223. If you enjoy the show, give us a review on iTunes. That's going to do it for this week. So until next time, keep running.